Hello and welcome to Health Matters on Channels Television. I am Mary Alale Yusuf. Thanks so much for staying with us. There are now over 105 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 globally. On Friday, February the 5th, 2021, more than 58.5 million people had recovered, and the death toll is almost 2.3 million. In Nigeria, cases exceeded 137,000. Over 111,000 people have recovered, and 1,641 people have died. Recovery rate is 81.1%, and fatality rate is 1.19%. The second wave is still on, but that does not stop other diseases. Indeed, cancer is one of those made worse by the presence of COVID-19, a group of diseases that can start in most organs and tissues. Cancer is the second leading cause of death globally. 9.6 million people died of it in 2018. Cervical cancer, the fourth most common cancer in women, affected about 570,000 women in 2018, and about 311,000 women worldwide died from it. Joining me via Zoom from Detroit, Michigan, in the United States of America, is a board-certified oncologist and member of the American Board of Medicine, Dr. Tosin Fregene. You're welcome to the show, doctor. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
You know, if people knew what caused cancer, I'm sure a lot of people would just avoid it. What causes cancer in the first place?
Well, the development of cancer is very varied and wide. But generally, it's due to an imbalance, either because somebody has a genetic predisposition or more commonly because of environmental factors. Environmental factors may be chemicals and could also be biologic things such as viruses. But the combination of these two events over time is what leads to a lot of cancers. In some cases, we don't know what causes some specific types of cancer.
But they say that there are some risk factors which are modifiable, you know, that could help people avoid cancer.
Yeah. Whenever there are cancers, there are things that can place people at increased risk for developing cancer. Now, there are factors such as smoking in some cases of cancer where you can modify this risk factor by stopping smoking. There are things which you can be exposed to which you can do things to reduce your exposure to those things. There are disease processes, including viruses that you can do things about to reduce. And then you also have non-modifiable risk factors, which are things that are inherent to you. For example, genetic predisposition. There are some types of cancers that run into family that you cannot modify your genes, but the modifiable disease factors you can always do something about.
Okay, let's talk about, zero it down, you know, to cervical cancers. Is there a cause that we can put our finger on that this is what causes cervical cancer?
One of the biggest things that has been identified as causing cervical cancer is a virus. There is a group of viruses called the human papilloma viruses, and this has been associated with about 70 to 95% of cases of cervical cancer.
Okay, so one of the risk factors would definitely be that the person is a woman. Are there others?
Yes. Other risk factors would include risk factors for smoking. Other risk factors would include chronic use of oral contraceptives. There are some dietary predispositions to forming cervical cancer. Sexual behaviors and patterns can also influence the risk for cervical cancer, as well as the person's immune status can also affect your predisposition to developing cervical cancer.
Going by 2018 figures for cervical cancer, the survival rates are really dismal, you know, for 2018. We have about 54% mortality for cervical cancer in 2018. Why is that so?
Well, in generally, cervical cancer, which is in what we call stages, a stage of a cancer depends on how advanced the cancer is. Now, when you say you got a 54% mortality for cervical cancer, that is for all comers. But the mortality rate ranges. The less cancer you have, the higher the chances that you can be cured. The later the stage or the more advanced your cancer is, the less likely it can be cured. So going from the spectrum of least advanced cancers, those can be cured. You have a what we call five-year mortality rate of 98%. But when you go to the most advanced cervical cancer, the outcome is dismal, about a 70% five-year survival rate. It's just advanced cancers tend not to be curable. Hence, you want to do things upfront to prevent the cancer or catch it early where you can do something about it and translate it into cure.
That means that most people present late. Could you hazard a guess why?
Well, there's a variety of reasons as to why people present late. People present when they start feeling discomfort. The early stages of cervical cancer, there is no discomfort, no symptoms. Now, the next stage in early presentation, the most common form of presentation of cervical cancer is intermittent vaginal bleeding, which may not be painful. This is usually found to be ignored because of a variety of reasons, self-denial, cultural. But in the more advanced stages, when you start developing pain, swelling of the legs, difficulty with your urination process and bowels, that is very late stage. By the time you start losing weight, that is very late stage, at which time you cannot do too much. As I said, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure.
Okay, so let's talk about prevention. How is it prevented? How do people come in the early stages when they don't feel anything, when they are not going through any pain?
Well, unfortunately, what you have to do is you have to look at it from a different perspective. You have to screen for cervical cancer. Fortunately, the female cervix is in a location that is potentially accessible and can be screened. There are screening modalities to check to see if a person is high risk or potentially will develop cervical cancer. And this includes testing such as the so-called pap smear, which is can be done on women to detect disease. If you're waiting to the point in time where you develop one of the most common symptoms, which is irregular or unusual bleeding, that is usually later down the line. It can be detected before all this occurs.
How often should women go for a screening, and what age should it start?
Okay. There's variability within that question, but generally between the age of 21 and 25, screening for cervical cancer should be taking place. In some people who have high risk behavior, it should be done on an annual basis, but at least every 3 years. But the most important thing is you need to get screened.
Okay, so we hear that there's a vaccine that can actually be taken. Can you explain that to us?
One of the big risk factors and causation for cervical cancer is its association with a virus, the so-called HPV virus. HPV standing for human papilloma virus. There are many different types of human papilloma viruses, and not all of them cause cancer. But there is two specific types, so-called serotypes 16 and 18. This is associated about up to 90% of cases of cervical cancer. The virus which is out there, it's ubiquitous, and most people get exposed to this virus during their lifetimes. It is transmitted in sexual mode or skin-to-skin contact. This virus affects the cells, chronic invasive cells, which become chronically infected. after a prolonged period of incubation and infection, if the infection is not cleared by the person's immune system, it can now cause early changes or precancerous changes in these cells. And that is what leads to the development of cervical cancer. If you can eliminate this HPV virus or prevent it from occurring by giving a vaccine, and there are such vaccines available, this can reduce the likelihood of an individual going on to develop HPV-associated cervical cancer. This being the main cause for causing cervical cancer, if you can prevent HPV 16 and 18, you have a significant reduction in developing cervical cancer later on. That is the basis for the HPV vaccine against cervical cancer.
Okay, so you say that this vaccine is likely to prevent cancer from happening, but does that mean that it can happen? Is the vaccine totally fail-safe?
Well, like most things in life, nothing in life is totally fail-safe. What the vaccine does is it prevents you from developing these particular types of HPV. Once you have the HPV, it cannot prevent you. It is important to administer this HPV vaccine early in life before a person becomes exposed to those particular types of HPV viruses. Hence, a call is made for patients to receive this vaccine earlier in life before they become sexually active. The HPV viruses are, again, sexually transmitted. They can also be transmitted in a variety of ways, but usually skin-to-skin form of contact. So if you can do something to prevent people from being able to be exposed to this virus by developing antibodies early on in life, you can later on down the line prevent them from developing cervical cancer. Nothing is fail-proof, and that is why even though you take the vaccine, you need to continue your screening modalities, because that's when you pick up the disease at an early stage when you can do something about it.
Okay, you said most cervical cancers are caused by this HPV 16 and 18 virus, right? So,
yes.
What causes others?
Well, other causes for cervical cancer and associations have been, there's some that could be familial. There are not a whole lot of them, but some of them can be familial, where people notice there's an increased risk of cervical cancer in some family member. Now, sexual behavior is also another factor that can be associated with developing cervical cancer. Exposure to certain types of medications, like some steroids, one particularly called diethylstilbestrone, can predispose to cancer. They reported some dietary measures that can also predispose people to cancer, as well as multiparity, which means the more children a patient has, the higher the incidence of them developing cervical cancer. There's also a little smattering of dietary measures, vegetables, fruits intake that can also, in deficient amounts, predispose people to developing cancer of the cervix.
Okay, that has been very, very enlightening, Doctor. We'll let you rest for about 30 seconds while we go on break, and then we'll continue. Stay with us. We're going for a short break, and then we'll continue the program. Welcome back. We're talking about cervical cancer. This is Health Matters on Channels Television. You can call 0808-054-2233 for your questions on cervical cancer. You can also tweet at CTV_E while the program continues. Now, Dr. Fregene, let's talk for a minute about people who do get the cancer, in whom it has not been prevented. How treatable is it when it's been contracted?
The treatment of cervical cancer and effectiveness of treatment of cervical cancer depends on what the extent of your cancer is at the time you're diagnosed. In cancer terms, we call this staging evaluation, whereby you have stage one, stage two, stage three, and stage four being the most advanced, where the cancer of the cervix has now left the cervix and is involving other organs of the body. That is treatable with chemotherapy, but chemotherapy only serves as a palliative mode. You cannot cure it when it's that advanced. In the earlier stages, stage one, where it's confined to the cervix, that is potentially curable either with surgery or with chemotherapy and radiation. The in-between stages are less curable than the first stages, one and two, and are treated with chemotherapy and radiation.
People generally believe that, at least in these parts, you know, that being treated with chemotherapy or radiation will eventually kill them. How true is this?
Unfortunately, that is not true. The truth about it is most people die from complications of their cervical cancer, which can occur in a variety of ways in which cancer can cause a person's demise. There may be complications which can occur with the treatment modalities, chemotherapy and radiation, but these are in a predictable fashion and can be modified and treated. Overall, they do more good than harm, and they can convene cure in the necessary stages, which will be the first, second, and third stages of cervical cancer, but not in the fourth stage. The first stage of cervical cancer can be treated with just surgical excision, or can be treated with radiation, or if the tumor is large, can be treated with chemotherapy and radiation tend to be standard. There may be some transient side effects, fatigue, some minor discomforts during the treatment, but this is nothing compared to saving your life.
I believe Adejoke is on the line from Abuja. Hello, Adejoke.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Is it morning or afternoon rather?
Well, it's different times at different parts of the world, so it's okay.
I really love what you are doing. I love what you are doing, Auntie. Honestly, you are doing a good work. And I give thanks to all the workers in China Television. You are doing very well. Thank you, Dr. the oncologist. But with all what he has been saying now, how this thing is going to be possible for the less privileged? I'm talking about the masses. You know, we have a lot of masses in Nigeria, particularly since after the lockdown. You know how the country is. How can people get money to do this test? Those who are looking for food to eat, they don't have money to eat. Come and see people begging along the road, both the young and the old. And our government is as if they don't care. Because these things are supposed to be free, and these testing centers are supposed to be everywhere. We are not even talking about the people in the villages.
Thank you so much, Adejoke. Now, Dr. Fregene, I know that you're in Michigan, but let me ask you, is there anywhere that cancer screening and treatment is under the National Health Insurance Scheme or something like that? Is that something that one can look into for cancer?
Definitely can be looked into. In a lot of the developed countries where screening has made a difference in the mortality from cervical cancer, it is presumed to be a national responsibility to the people, and it's done in such measures. This has also been achieved in sub-Saharan Africa, in a country like Rwanda, with cooperation with the government and other non-profit international organizations. They were able to get a 98% vaccination rate in trying to prevent cervical cancer through the HPV virus. So it can be done, and government help and participation is necessary for a project like this to succeed.
Are there other types of cancers or diseases that this HPV vaccine prevents?
Yes. Now, there are more than 100 strains of HPV viruses. We talked about strain 16 and 18 causing cervical cancer. But there are other strains. Some of them can cause non-malignant cancers, things like warts, which can occur in the hands, can occur in the private areas and the anal region. some of the other HPV viruses can cause other types of cancers involving the back of the throat. It can also occur in males, causing some types of cancers involving the male genital organs as well. So HPV viruses, not all of them cause malignant cancers, invasive cancers as we call them, but some of them can also cause cancers in non-females as well as benign growths, such as warts.
There's talk, though, that this particular vaccine, which is used for cervical cancer, can be used on boys with, you know, some sort of results. What's this?
Yes. Well, what it is a lot of cervical cancer occurring through the HPV virus is via sexual contact. So early age of onset of sexual contact with continuous sexual contact or sexual contact with multiple individuals causes reinfection, because the HPV virus is common out there. It occurs in men as well as women. So part of the thinking is, if you vaccinate the women and the men, you can reduce the likelihood of the woman becoming infected with this HPV 16 and 18. It can also potentially reduce the likelihood of men, depending on type of HPV vaccine, developing penile warts and things like that. But it can also reduce the likelihood of cervical cancer by preventing the men from infecting the woman, if it is given early in life to avoid a vaccine is effective.
Okay, I believe we're getting a call from Ogun State. Shobi, I believe. Okay, we seem to have lost that call. But you did say that girls can be vaccinated with this
yes.
HPV vaccine. If all girls were vaccinated, how often do they need to go for screening? Since you say it is not fail-safe. Initially, you told us every 3 years. But with the vaccine, does that change?
No, it does not change. You still need to be monitored for evidence of cervical cancer. Asymptomatic in early stages, which is why screening needs to continue. Whether you have the vaccine or not, you need to be screened. Preferably, you have the vaccine and the vaccine is administered at an early age before these individuals get exposed to this type of HPV virus where it is most effective. But screening is a must and must continue. Recommendations are at least every 3 to 5 years.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Tosan Fregene. That has been very educative, and thanks for taking time out. I know it's really early where you are, so that was an effort on your part. We appreciate you coming. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you so much, viewers at home, everywhere where you're watching, because channels can be watched on the move. Thanks for tuning in. And have a wonderful day. I am Mary Alaleye.